Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder, and thanks for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. And guess what? I have a question for you. Do you have a spiritual practice? You know, that question is like asking if you like your pet. In spirituality, I mean, people slip into either one of two ditches. We either take our spirituality and our practices way too seriously, or we don't take them seriously at all. In today's podcast, I share my experience with many diverse spiritual practices, and I want to share with you what I've learned through my quest. You'll be just as surprised as I was to discover that every spiritual practice creates an illusion that must be overcome, or else the practice itself becomes void and empty. Join me now as we learn what is beyond our spiritual containers to see and understand our connection to the divine contents. Hello, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. I am your host. My name is Kevin Winder. I like to serve the world as an online pastor, author, and uncoach, among many other things. I'm so glad to have you with me, and I am glad to have you join the podcast today. Welcome to Sunday. Folks, I want to invite you to go to my website, www.kevinwinder.com. Sign up for Winder's Windshield so that you can get my weekly newsletter sent to your inbox each and every week. And that'll make sure that you never miss a single bit of this very rare and unique content. Go to kevinwinder.com. Remember, I spell my name like the number 7, K-E-V-E-N, kevinwinder.com. Sign up today. Like I always say, if you do, I'll be so glad. So today, folks, we are going to talk. The title of today's talk is called The Illusion of Spiritual Practice. The Illusion of Spiritual Practice. And what you're going to find today in this podcast is kind of the conclusions of nearly a life journey in spiritual formation. My journey is not unique. It's like many people's, but in some ways it's very different. I know that we all have a spiritual hunger and a spiritual component to our human reality. Some of us really try and explore and understand that. Other people go through life just barely, if ever, exploring it. And the diversity of human experience, the diversity of our own geographies, the religions and the frameworks and the politics and the just everything that we face when we grow up really shapes our understanding and our faith. And I think it's really important to try and get underneath of all that. And so, I mean, if you have listened to this podcast at all, or you've followed my blog for any number of years, then by now you should know that I am a deconstructionist. And that's not the goal. My goal is not to deconstruct, but that is the work that I do. Make no mistake about it. This kind of content tends to rub people the wrong way because I'm always kind of picking at these little scabs, these little nuances. That's like, why do you have to say it that way? When you say it that way, it makes it sound like the thing I've cherished so much is it's not so great, or it causes me to doubt, and I don't like to doubt, you know. And you ask these questions that really push the boundaries. And yes, I get that, but that's the work of deconstruction. That's the question that we all ask. Like, do we really need this here? And if not, why do we keep it? These are really valid questions. You know, and I didn't start out that way, but I learned over 30 years of ministry that, you know, we just can't add something good to our life and then hope it all sticks. You see, lasting change is, like I always say, as a kind of a metaphor for this, it's like a kitchen remodel. You know, the old cabinets and counters, they have to come out if we are going to enjoy the kitchen of our dreams. Nobody takes a big granite slab and just throws it on top of the Formica countertops. It just doesn't happen. You got to go through the dust and the noise and the breaking apart of the thing that you had in order to have that thing you really want. And when we're talking about spirituality, when we talk about our spiritual practices, we get, it's like, you know, calling the baby ugly. And man, people don't like it. They get offended. They get hurt. They get angry. They want to retaliate. And man, I understand that. But this isn't new. And the goal behind all this is to really grow you and to grow your soul. But you know, when it comes to the substructures that uphold our identity, that uphold our faith, our understanding of truth, this deconstruction process is horrifying. It's threatening. It's quite painful for some. Now, of course, you know, that which replaces the old wineskin, as it says in Mark 2:22, is so much superior to that, you know, which you had before. The new kitchen is so much better than the old kitchen that it makes the dust and the noise worth it, right? It makes the discomfort worth it. And that is why I do the work of deconstruction. It's not to just destroy people's faith. It's to destroy a petty, pathetic little faith so that a new faith can grow in its place. You see, you know, nonetheless, I don't know. I feel like everybody at some point has to, you know, enter what Psalm 23 says is the shadow of death. You're not really going to die through deconstruction. It's just going to feel like you're going to die. So what's going to happen is you're actually going to be reborn. You're going to be born anew. And see, for the last several years, I mean, probably more than a decade, I have been deconstructing spiritual practices with the sole purpose of getting beyond them. And when I was working at a church and asking these questions, trust me, the elder board didn't like it either. You know, when you say, well, why do we need that? You know, why do we need this pipe organ? Why do we need, you know, this kind of service? Why do we, you know, why do we pray like that? Why do we need to do our communion like that? You know, these kinds of questions start really picking at people's preferences, which really have nothing to do with anything other than just their opinion. And like peeling an onion, one layer gives way to the next. And when it came to the area of spirituality, I just have wondered why so many people go to such great lengths in their spiritual practices. You ever wonder that? Why are they so elaborate? Why are they so full of pomp and circumstance and reverence and all this stuff? And I get it. Yeah, they're trying to put on a show for God, is it? Is it that God is watching when you're at Sunday service, and that's why you need to wear a suit and tie to go to the tabernacle or whatever it is you're doing? I mean, come on. Is God not watching on Monday when you're wearing sweatpants? And I mean, these are the kinds of questions that I know are annoying, but let's ask them. Now, I've interviewed hundreds of people and of nearly every religion, and I've gotten under the hood with many of my friends and people that have different traditions and perspectives. And I've got to let you know, I've tried nearly every single practice that I have been exposed to. I've read all the sacred texts. I've read the Bible nearly 100 times. I've read the Quran multiple times. I've read the Book of Mormon. The Pearl of Great Price. I've read the Bhagavad Gita. I've read many different like books on Midrash and Jewish history and texts, and I mean countless books on spirituality and quantum healing and quantum physics, and I mean you name it. I have covered the span because this is an interest and a passion of mine. And whenever somebody said, "Hey, you need to try this," I've tried it. And you might be interested in what I found. But here's a spoiler alert. If you are really attached to your rituals, then don't deconstruct them or anybody else's. Just stay happy, stay content, run your little program, and don't ask any questions. Yeah? If that's what you want, that's what you'll get. Now, atheists, which are an interesting group of people, often conclude that they don't have spiritual practices because they don't believe in God. And they don't believe there's anything behind the spiritual practice. You know, with no God behind it, all spiritual practice is just some ancestral or genetic bend that kind of makes us want to appease the powers that are greater than us. And that's basically how science describes tribal level consciousness. You know, you do the dance so that you get the rains for the crops, you know, and then you get the crops and then you give a portion of those crops to the gods so that the gods will bless your crops and bless your hunt and all that kind of stuff. And I can see how, as a sociologist and a, you know, a scientist, you might look at that from the outside and just say these are just low levels of consciousness that haven't really understood how things actually work, and they have these rituals that surround the process. And, you know, ironically, we haven't really gotten very far from tribal level consciousness. But, you know, let's think about this in terms of the atheist and their spiritual reality. Those who tenaciously hold to that view of the scientific worldview are often just appeasing powers greater than themselves, right? I mean, when you read people who blog and talk on the internet about their atheism, they're often just simply saying, hey, we wouldn't want to disappoint Dawkins, would we? Right. So my point here is that everyone gets pulled into the tractor beam of spiritual practice. And, you know, if all the good scientists really want to uphold the great thought leaders like the Dawkins and Stephen Hawking's and all these others that are out there, then they're appealing to a power greater than them, too, which means they're actually behaving in a very spiritual way. They're practicing a spiritual practice. Now, I've discovered that everybody, without exception, engages in some kind of spiritual practice. You might make up your own thing as you go along. You might go to church every Sunday. You might be the kind of person that absolutely refuses to do anything but go to church on Sunday and make sure everybody knows you are not available on Sunday because you will be at church. So, you know, some practice a strict religion and appease a very specific God, right? It's only Allah, it's only Yahweh, it's only Jesus. Others practice mindfulness to appease a nameless energy or the universe, you know. Well, the universe wants this for you and has this for you, and you just have to reach out and receive it, and, you know, it's nameless. It's just an energy field. Then others practice to appease themselves, whether they realize it or not. You see, every tribe has a secret sauce. And we all have some experience of proximity to a deeper reality, which really touches our existential questions of being. And some engage this proximity rarely. I mean, some people like might think about this stuff only when they're sitting at a graveside or just maybe at the top of a mountain every now and then. And they live mostly unconscious of, you know, these greater realities. But other people, they rarely leave this proximity. You know, they're so dialed in. They're so stuck in their framework and their system that it's like they're literally at church all the time. They only read certain books, only listen to certain music, only this, only that, only, you know, they're just kind of huddled away in this rare experience, hoping to just stay in this one zone. And, you know, the most people we know, we just bounce back and forth between this proximity of divine reality and what we call our life that we have to live every day. Now, this reality led me to conclude that spirituality is, it's ontological, right? Not orthopraxy. And what that's another way of saying, this is really about our being and not our doing. You know, once these questions emerged in me years ago, I wondered why I even needed to go to church anymore. I'd sit there and discuss with, you know, the other elders at our church meeting and the pastor and saying, well, what do we, you know, if we're teaching the sermon, then whose sermons are teaching us, right? I mean, is it just enough for us to go and put on the show to be a part of the show, or do we have to go to a show ourselves? And if you're a leader of the show and you're just putting on the show, then why do we even need to go anymore? And if I can be spiritual enough to not have to go to a Sunday big show, a church event, but I can offer the services to others, then what's, you know, if I don't have to go, then why does anybody else in the congregation have to go? Once the Sunday big show with all its songs and prayers and sermons and superficial greetings were seen as just scaffolding to prop up this existential proximity to my maker, I no longer found anything there that wasn't accessible anywhere else at any other time. I mean, people say, well, what about your people and the community? Well, yeah, I mean, certain people aren't there every week, but I have community everywhere I go. There's people, right? So, you know, sermons are available 24/7 on the radio. I don't have to go to church on Sunday to get a sermon. And prayer, as we all know, is any moment of that we are conscious. We don't have to go to church on Sunday for prayer. And you can certainly worship in countless ways, including songs and obedience and service and giving and other things like that. So you didn't have to be a part of some worship service to be a worshiper. You know, giving, I didn't have to go to church to give because giving opportunities abounded in life and community and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I didn't need a community group because community is the byproduct of living and, you know, walking in the same direction with people. So for those churches that go beyond the perfunctory performance, you know, then, hey, I'm still interested in visiting. I have no interest in going to a church that's just all song and dance and nothing in between. But a church that kind of gets it, I would love to come and visit, and I do. But there's no way I'm signing up for this on a weekly basis. So deconstruction really opened me up to these other practices. I mean, I began asking, what are you experiencing in that practice? And so I began exploring. And here's just a small list of what I have tried. Okay, you ready? I've tried chanting, meditating, yoga, Tai Chi Cha, walking, countless types of prayer. I mean, there is books and books and volumes on different ways to pray. I've tried countless types. Numerous types and kinds of worship experiences. Every church denomination has a different strategy for how they're going to get it going. And I've been to them all. I've tried to do the speaking in tongues. I've tried to be a part of healing services, guided meditation, transcendental meditation, acts of service, praying, rote prayers, writing poetry, symbolism, liturgies, journaling, all forms of obedience. I've tried fasting. I've tried immersion deep into these immersion, like, you know, these big, heavy retreats that are weighty and just kind of pull you out of your life and into this experience, right? I've done those many times. Endless amounts of study. I mean, study is my go-to practice. Numerous sacred texts. I've read them all, like I said earlier, and countless strict obedience practices. I mean, the practice of obedience to laws and creeds and paths and pillars and techniques. You know, everybody's got one. Everybody's got this list that they want you to do. And so I've tried all of that with deep sincerity and obedience. And we're all told that these are the path to God or to self-awareness. And it's really, really interesting. But here's the big question. Did any of them work? Did it work? You see, the answer is no and yes. You see, each practice is just a mere container. And as such, it may or may not have any contents in it at any given time. I mean, I certainly have my preferences. I mean, like I said, I can study. I can read the Bible all day long. But if you ask me to chant, I just can't chant without laughing at the chanter. I'm sorry. I can't get there. I love being in my body, but Tai Chi and yoga and walking are way too slow and boring for me. And of course, I was told that I just wasn't there yet. You know, if you go into those practices, which are really slow and inward and introverted and, you know, all that, they're just going to say that I hadn't gone and done the hard work yet. I got monkey mind, or I've got something else going on. I have to get out of my head and I have to work on learning how to be still or to be quiet. And that's not, I'm not denying that reality, but I can be still and I can be quiet and I can do the practice with sincerity, but it doesn't always get there, right? I can't always get out of my head, and I don't know that anybody does. And those who are teaching you how to get out of your head always use your head to try and rationalize why you need to get out of your head. And I found that each tradition has a guru that kind of makes you feel like a flunky, right? There's always somebody who's mastered their practice. And then their message to you is always the same. No matter whether they're trying to get you to read your Bible more, to meditate more, to go out into nature more, or to do whatever. They just say, wind it tighter, work it harder, keep doing it. Just keep practicing it. Whether or not you like it, whether or not you feel it, whether or not you want it, just keep doing it. Because why? Well, that's what they've done. You see, I'm a man who is biased towards his head, and you know, but my gut and my heart are not undeveloped. It's not like I'm not aware of those, the triad and their interrelationship. You know, I've discovered that there just is a spirituality to speed. There is a spirituality to production. There's a mindfulness to noise that is completely lost on the slow and the still and the quiet. Right? There's something about movement and speed and engagement and productivity that is a mindfulness. It's a level of spirituality that seems to be lost on people who are trying to just undo it all. And turning me into an introverted, unattached meditator is not spiritual progress for me. It's the loss of my true self. It's the same flaw as me trying to turn my previous congregation into extroverted missional theologians who debated the Bible. It's ultimately just Tupperware sales. You know, we're just focusing on containers here, folks. So my suggestion to you is this. Practice your practice. I mean, whatever truly feeds your soul, do that. Start there. Right? I'm not saying that that's all you ever have to do or all that you ever will do. And I'm not even saying that that practice will actually completely feed your soul. I'm just saying that if it feeds your soul today, do it. Whatever gives you a profound sense of the transcendent, practice that. Do that. You see, I'm convinced that spiritual practice has never brought anybody to God. It's never brought anybody to self-awareness. Ironically, though, that is the goal, right? I mean, that's what spiritual practice is supposed to do. It's supposed to let us have this experience with God, and yet it's never done that. Instead, what happens, I believe, is that God graciously shows up within a practice and makes us self-aware, makes us aware of God, our Maker. You see, God shows up in other experiences, too, shows up in our suffering, shows up in times when we're not even trying to be spiritually mindful. We just get this aha moment. We get this sense of presence, an uncanny sense of peace, a sense of beauty, or an overwhelming sense of love. You see, omnipresence means there is no off switch. Did you hear that? Omnipresence, God being everywhere all the time, means there's no off switch. Separation from God is really an ultimate illusion. I always put it this way. Imagine you're on a plane, like a playing field, but that field goes on in infinite direction in all directions. So at what point are you not in the center of that, right? Can you move to the side of it if it's infinite in every direction? Of course not. So you're always dead center in the middle of what God would have for you. You see, separation from God is an illusion. Spiritual practices can seriously distort reality by convincing us that we are engaging our Maker on our own terms. Like, oh, I get to engage God by doing my little thing. It's really just a spiritual vending machine. When in reality, proximity to God is never on our terms. It's on God's terms. You can't make God show up like a genie in the bottle. I'm sorry. All the songs you sing don't make it happen. But God graciously comes and attends all of these things, just as he graciously attends all the things that you are completely oblivious to. You know, they can give us an illusion, which an illusion, by the way, is just another word for bad theology. It's a bad theology that says we go in and out, we go close and far from God. See, James Finley put it this way. He says the goal of spiritual practice is to basically assume an inner posture that allows us the greatest opportunity to be overtaken by that which we cannot control, right? This is not something that is on your terms. The spiritual practice is really just a way of getting you to assume the right posture on the inside. Now, if it does that, and then God shows up, then yes, the spiritual practice works. And that list that I gave you, I have experienced God in all of them. So, you know, let's just say that the practice itself is a container, because that's what it is. It's not necessarily the means, because one day it works and another day it doesn't. And I know that if the inner posture is receptive and desiring, then any practice will do. If you can get your inner posture in the right place, it doesn't matter what you do. It really doesn't. You see, that just begs the question for me. Here's the deconstruction creeping in again. Why not just live your life with the posture of receptivity to God? By picking and choosing our practices, do you realize that we're actually, when we say, hey, I like this practice, I like to go to church and sing 3.5 songs, give an offering, do a prayer, hear a sermon, grab some coffee, chat with my friends, and hit lunch. That's my spiritual practice. And if you say, I like that, that's valid. Those are the good ones. But meditation, no, you don't need to do that. Walking in solidarity, you don't need to do that. Spending hours in study of sacred texts, you don't need to do that, right? You're picking and choosing. Do you realize that? And by picking and choosing your favorites, you are actually showing yourself to be atheistic towards other practices. Because what you're saying is, these practices get me to God, those practices will not get me to God, or not to my God. So I'm atheistic. I don't believe in that God or that practice. And have you ever considered that the atheist simply went one more further than you did? The atheist just said, well, I don't believe in your God either, so I'm not doing that. So what if, though, what if instead of all that, what if anything and everything is a conduit for divine proximity? Because if separate, being separate from God is an illusion, then everything is a conduit for divine proximity. You see, each and every moment the Creator is coming to us, in us, through us, in and as our very life. You see, the love of God is coming to you in and as that traffic jam in front of you, but you can't see it as that. The love of God is coming to you in and as your very best friend calling at just the right time. Oh, you can see it there. The love of God is coming to you in and as your very life. It's incarnated as our life. You see, we all stand on holy ground, whether we recognize it or not. Just like Moses, he was always standing there. It was only when he was told, hey, you're on holy ground, take off your shoes. It's like, oh my goodness, I got to take off my shoes. This is now a holy place. It was always a holy place. His consciousness just joined in its holiness. See, so when Scripture says in 1 Corinthians 10:31, whether we eat or drink, we should do all things to the glory of God. Eating and drinking is mundane. It's just the practice of feeding your body. And so how is that spiritual, right? Was it only spiritual if you say a big prayer in front of everybody at the buffet on Sunday morning so that everybody sees what's going on? Is that what makes your meal sacred? Or is it just you can finally eat and drink and participate, realizing that the love of God is welling up and showing itself in and as the food that's sustaining your life? That God is sustaining your very life in and as the salad bar. I know, sounds odd at first, until you start to realize that there's separateness from God is just an illusion. It's the delusion that's brought about by spiritual practice, which says that this is in and that is out. You see, this is not pantheism. This is not saying that everything is God. This is saying that the cosmic Christ is being named here above and beyond and in all things. It's this is the very presence of God. Your very life is the temple. So what if spirituality is just that pure? What if it's just that easy? What if the universal and the particular join everywhere, not just in these moments of punctuation in our spiritual practice? Well, then what is your maker saying through your life? I mean, have you overdone it on the pomp and circumstance? Maybe you should just back it off. Here's an easy way to tell. Don't do that practice for 6 months. Stop going to church for 6 months. Stop reading your books for 6 months. Don't do that meditation for 6 months, right? Stop that practice and see what happens. If you fall apart completely, then perhaps that practice is doing something that's helping you in your proximity to God. If it does nothing, if there's no difference, you're doing something perfunctory. See, what is your maker saying through your life? If your life is your maker showing up in and as your life, what is your life saying? Is it on course? Is it a wreck? Is it peaceful? Is it thriving? Does it overcome? Is it full of faith and life and vitality? Or, I mean, what is it saying? Have you overdone it? Have you underdone it? Have you sacralized only some things? Or do you sacralize nothing at all? The question soon becomes, will you allow your life to become your spiritual practice?